In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents A Voice of Truth and Inspiration with a Conversation That Matters. Live from Los Angeles, we are making moments by illuminating new paths to a better way of being. As we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a greater understanding of ourselves and the world in which we live. This is radio like you've never felt before. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with tonight's special guest, best-selling author and preeminent spokesperson on consciousness, Lynn McTaggart. And now your host, our MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. I am excited about today's show because we've got Lynn McTaggart on, as you know. And I got to meet Lynn a year or so ago at the premiere of the Living Matrix, actually, when I was interviewing her on the red carpet at the Egyptian Theater here in Hollywood. And I got such a great feel from her. She was real, and the connection felt real and honest and pure, and it was a great experience just to spend those few minutes with her on camera. So it's interesting that that connection, and then to read this book, The Bond, connecting through the space between us is what she's about, that kind of connection. Well, it's interesting that something happened about a month ago where I was in a panic. But before I tell you that, I'll leave you in suspense and tell you that what I'm leading at is that more and more we are looking at where things come from, how things are made. For example, there are those of us who shop for clothes looking for something that's fashionable, something that's in. There are those of us who shop for clothes looking for something that's comfortable or something that's warm, we have criteria for going out shopping for clothes, for example. But now we're starting to look at, well, wait a minute. Were these clothes made by children in a sweatshop? Because I don't want to wear that. I don't feel that's right. Besides, some people are saying that there's an energy put out by the children or by that kind of activity that is not something you want to be wearing, and it gets into the clothes. So now, beyond is it fashionable, is it something that was made with integrity? Is it something that was made the way I would want it to be made? So we know this about food, for example, when we say we went to somebody's house and had food and it was made with love, or those of you who have seen Like Water for Chocolate know that every time the cook, as she was making food, if she was crying, then the guests were crying when they ate the food. If she was happy, then the guests were happy when they ate the food. And it was a little bit exaggerated, a lot exaggerated in the film, but you get the idea. So we want to know, well, who's making our food? Some of us want to buy from farmers markets or directly from the farmer. So what I'm getting at is that we are more and more wanting to know with what kind of process does this come to me? Is it with integrity? Is it with values that I believe in? And in our self-help gurus, quote unquote, or spiritual or scientific gurus, again, quote unquote, we are wanting to know more and more, not just the message, but more about the messenger. Is this how they are? Is this who they really are? Which brings me to the point of my panic about a month ago around this exact time. Because having met Lynn on the red carpet, I wanted to personally connect with her and ask her if she would be a guest on our show, which she immediately graciously said yes. But I'm not the one who normally books the guests on Life Changes with Filippo. It's our producer, Dorothy Donahue. So she knows how to do everything and never had a problem. But this time, I booked Lynn McTaggart, and I was happy about that because I made a personal connection with her, and she connected me with her publicist, and her publicist asked me for dates. I gave her gave him the date that that would work for us, et cetera, et cetera. And in my mind, we were set to go. We publicized it on the website, et cetera, et cetera. But unfortunately, again, not being the one to book the shows, so not knowing the procedures that we go through, my mistake. Also, I was traveling, so I didn't get all the emails from the publisher. And Lynn being as busy as she was, we had to make sure that all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. And lo and behold, I did not dot the I's or cross the T's. And so when it came to the day of the show, I emailed the publicist and I said, by the way, just want to thank you for setting up Lynn on our show tonight, just as a little gracious thank you. And he wrote back immediately saying, I don't have Lynn scheduled on the show. I never heard back from you on this or this. And I said, well, what do you mean? I gave you the date. And this was back and forth in emails. And noticing that he was in London and Lynn was in Canada at the time, I didn't figure that he would be able to connect with Lynn or that he would even read my subsequent emails and that it would kind of end at, you know, Lynn's not booked on the show. Well, this can't be. We don't have a guest if Lynn's not on the show. We already publicized Lynn, and I was in a panic. Now, happily to say, Dorothy and Mark, nobody else was in a panic here at Life Changes, just me, especially since I was the one that had booked Lynn or thought I had booked Lynn. So since Lynn had given me her personal number, I went ahead and called her and left her a message saying, Lynn, what can we do here? Evidently, I've made a mistake, but you're our guest on our show today, so can we make this happen? All this to say that I received an email from the publicist in London, which would have been like 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning his time, where he said that he personally called Lynn on her cell phone to see if there was any way that she could squeeze in even a few minutes so that our show wasn't a loss and that they could make us happy and kind of fulfill that for us. But unfortunately, there wasn't that kind of time in Lynn's schedule. Lynn actually ended up calling me directly and leaving a message saying, Filippo, I'm sorry this happened. I don't know how it happened, but I assure you we'll be able to book another time and we will do it. And she didn't have to do that. The publicist didn't have to go the extra mile to see if he could make it happen, even though it was my mistake and even though Lynn's schedule was already filled. And Lynn called with the 5 minutes of time she had in between one show and the next. And she used that time to call me and to say, I'm sorry about all this, even though it wasn't her mistake. Let's make it happen. And I thought, you know, now with that experience, I hated the fact that it happened because I made a mistake and also because it went into a panic. And wouldn't you know it, of course, there was a guest waiting in the wings that had been wanting to be on our show for a long time, that we had wanted on the show for a long time, and that we just called up and said, hey, this happened, and the guest was available and gracious and was on the show, and it was perfect, and everybody was happy. And now we had Lynn on the we have Lynn on the show today, and everybody's happy, especially me. But the point is that the bond, connecting through the space between us, and Lynn felt us. And though it wasn't her problem, in a sense, she felt it was our situation, and that she wanted to at least let us know that it's going to be okay and that she's here with us and we'll figure this out. And to me, that's somebody that's living up to the books that she's putting out and the story that she's telling. And we're going to hear that story when we come back with Lynn McTaggart right after this.
Clean water is not enough. reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWays ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWays ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. And ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWays Water Systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWays Water Systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook, and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, we're back, and we're back with Lynn McTaggart. Lynn is one of the preeminent spokespersons on consciousness. She is, and the new physics, and the science of spirituality. She is the award-winning journalist and author of 5 books, including the worldwide bestsellers, The Field, and The Intention Experiment. She's also editorial director of What Doctors Don't Tell You, and she also has published one of the world's most highly praised health newsletters and runs highly popular health and spirituality teleconferences and workshops, of which she was just on, and so we're grateful to be able to have her during this time in between so many other things. One of Lynn's latest books is The Bond, Connecting Through the Space Between Us. A lot of people have said a lot of great things about it. Deepak Chopra says, once in a very great while, a book comes along that shifts our sense of reality or extols a new way of living. And Lynn McTaggart's extraordinary new book, The Bond, does both. So here is Lynn McTaggart.
Hi there. How you doing?
Hi, Lynn. Finally, great to have you on.
Oh, good. It's great to be with you, Filippo.
And you know, it's kind of interesting that I was sharing with the audience the story of how I thought we had you on, and then we didn't have you on, and it was my mistake, but you called nonetheless, even though it wasn't your mistake, but you took the time to say, you know, don't worry, it's going to be okay, we'll make it right, we'll make it happen. And so in reading the book, or in knowing about how this book partially came to be, there was an incident with your daughter that you said, well, this is unfair. And so can you share a little bit about that and how it leads to the book?
Yeah, I mean, this book had a big genesis and a little genesis. And the big genesis was really that I wanted to ask myself, how come we're in such crisis? Why are all of these things happening? You know, we've got ecological crises and financial crises and foreign debt crises and, you know, extreme weather crises and you name it crises. So right. I wanted to figure out, why is this all converging? And the second thing was just something that happened to one of my daughters. She's a very talented actress, and she was chosen for the main role in her school play. And then suddenly I heard that she had been shunted to a more modern, more minor role. And she didn't really share with me what had happened. I couldn't find out what the reason was for the change until one of her friends let slip that another girl had lied when a new director came on board to take over the role given to my daughter. And this girl, by the way, was one of my daughter's best friends. So I was just shocked by the whole incident and how this betrayal. So I brought it up tactfully to the mother of the girl in question. And she turned to me and said, well, you know, she kind of shrugged it off and said, well, you know, that's life, isn't it? And I was just shocked thinking about this. But then the more I thought about it, the more I had to agree with her. You know, it certainly is the life we adults have designed for ourselves. You know, we've created competition as the engine in every area of our lives, in schools. And, you know, we encourage kids to win at all costs, in our financial markets, in our business models. you know, competition is the central engine there. Profits at all costs. Winning and coming first at all costs. Relationships are so often adversarial. And even our neighborhoods, you know, God forbid somebody's driving a Mercedes when you're driving a Ford. So I started thinking about competition and whether or not competition really was meant to be the driving force of the human experience. You know, were we meant to be like this? And if we aren't, then how are we supposed to be? You know, or have we just come to the natural endpoint of our evolution of using competition, and we need a different driver now?
You know, that just brings to mind so many experiences from childhood up until now, whether it's just with friends or with business relationships, or that competition has been the driving force throughout all of these experiences and relations, which brings me to, I like the fact that you say we're hardwired to help each other, but it just seems that we haven't had that experience.
Well, we've been told a different story. You know, a lot of things write the story we live by, you know, and one of the biggest things right now really is still science. So, you know, we've got philosophy and religion and all of those other things, but really science has replaced that to a great degree. Science writes the story that we live by, and the scientific story up until now has basically told us two things. With the discoveries of Isaac Newton, and they were brilliant discoveries, no doubt, but they pretty much described a world of individual things that were, you know, wholly self-contained. So we, first of all, we bought the idea that we're all separate and that we all operate in this kind of clockwork universe where everything is extremely well-behaved, but separated from each other, from itself, separated from everything else. And then with the discoveries of Charles Darwin, we were imbued with the idea that life is really all a race to the finish line, that, you know, that all of those things are in competition to survive and there just isn't enough. And that story, you know, Darwin never actually said survival of the fittest. That was one of his good friends who coined that term. And Darwin had a much more metaphoric idea about this kind of survival, you know, the idea of tree roots struggling for water. That was his real idea of struggle. But nevertheless, he still was influenced by ideas at the time about population explosion and there not being enough out there and things having to compete to survive because there's just too much life out there. And so that really informed his thinking. And it's hard to appreciate how much influence Darwin had. Darwin's ideas swept the globe. Darwin was the J.K. Rowling of his day. His books sold out before they even came into the bookstores. People were just, you know, grabbing them by the truckloads. And also because of mass printing, which had just come to the just come about at the time, his books swept the globe. And they were used to justify a lot of burgeoning movements at the time, you know, industrialization, capitalism. And so we modeled a lot of our structures out of that structure, that idea of survival. And that's been the structures up until now in so many arenas, the idea, you know, that there just isn't enough out there. And so you've got to get there first before anybody else. So we've, you know, we've modeled so much about that. And yet, the new science that's coming to the fore in physics, biology, psychology, sociology, all of these ologies are demonstrating that that is not true, that actually we weren't made to compete with each other. We were made to connect. We were hardwired to connect with every fiber of our being. And we were made to be share, care, and be fair. And when we are that way, we succeed. But when we compete, we don't. We're weak. And that's been demonstrated right now. That's what's going on right now.
you're saying when we compete, we're weak. And when you're saying that's demonstrated right now, you mean with all the crisis that's going, that's what's happening because of that.
This is the end days of that mindset. I think that kind of egoic and competitive mindset is really having its day now, because, you know, when you are fighting just for your own little patch all the time, and when you are focusing just on your own selfish needs, well, the end game of selfishness is a society that falls apart. And now we've got a situation where we don't have neighborhoods anymore, where we don't have, our relationships are breaking down. We've got, 50% end in divorce. We are blowing up the planet with our power that we have, our technology. We're companies and the whole financial market in operating only for their own good and not for any kind of collective good, have destroyed the financial model. And we're right now at a situation where all of that is really falling apart. And so, it's really demonstrating to us, this is the end point of what selfishness looks like. This is what it looks like. Ultimately, is it eats its own children.
Mm. Oh wow, what an analogy! You know, Lynn, of course I agree, and yet I wonder how one helps the people who are being selfish. Well, we all are at a certain point, but we all need to learn at different levels. But the ones that seem like they're hoarding or let me give you an example. If somebody in business, your friend, who your daughter's friend, who lied so that she could get her part, in her mind, she got the part and she got to play it and she got the applause and everything she wanted, and she is quote unquote happy. But now we have crisis in the world because of her, right? But she doesn't know that.
Yeah, well, she's just one person who experiences, life and experiences the need to be first and thinks that that is the important element. But, life will teach her that that isn't really, what it's all about as her life goes on. I mean, for my daughter, it was a really interesting lesson for her. She dealt with that betrayal in a very interesting way. She kind of soaked it all in. But there was an opportunity for her at a new school last year to take over somebody else's role. Mm. And she said, no, I wouldn't do that to someone else.
Oh, wow.
So that's how that played out in her. It actually was an interesting learning experience for her. And I was very proud that that's what her response was. So, the people with the most toys, that's always been the idea that they win. But I think this is being demonstrated that's not the case. When there's no more food, or when there's extreme weather, and there are tornadoes or there are forest fires that are totally out of control, it really doesn't matter whether you're the big house or the little house, So I think we're getting to the point of understanding that this mindset is really so destructive, and we have to move on. We have to do something new. And that's really what I tried to do with the bond, is to say, you know what? We had certain training and programming that's brought us to this place. We had programming that makes us see in a very piecemeal way, because we can't really see the whole, because we've been taught to just look at what's in it for us and to taught to look for individual things. We see very differently from other cultures, indigenous cultures, who can see much more in the space between things. They can see much more of the whole. And we've learned to relate just like what's in it for me. We've learned to relate in an adversarial way. We've learned, to care so much about just our own that we don't really connect in small clusters anymore. And we've learned to have a life purpose that's all about what's in it for me, my own me and mine, making my own money, and that's about it. So I'm saying in the bond, we have to retrain ourselves in those four areas in particular to learn how to see the whole if we're going to move on, if we're going to survive.
It's interesting that you say that. Lately, I've been thinking how we teach, or we used to teach children how they need to play fairly, play nice, they need to share, let everybody else have a turn. But then when these same children grow up, they probably follow what their parents did instead of what their parents said. And then when it comes to business and other things, that they're not playing fairly and they're not being nice and not letting everybody have a turn and not sharing.
Well, exactly. I think we learn, you know, we do learn these, you know, these virtues. And that's why I've started a thing called the Fairness Campaign, because people have forgotten how to be fair. People have put other things above fairness and integrity and honesty and trust. And they don't understand that, you know, fairness is one of the most selfish things we can do, actually. Mm. Because, first of all, we've been hardwired to feel we actually have an it's not fair button in the brain. That goes off when life isn't fair, when we've taken too much or we've been given too little. We feel it very acutely. We have a real sense of reciprocity of what's fair. We all know in our hearts what's fair. But America, in particular, is at its most unfair in history. We have 1% of the population making and controlling 40% of the money, and the other 99%. Are making less money than they did before. Many of them are losing their homes, their jobs, even their savings. And so life is pretty unfair right now. And in that situation, this was the interesting part about the science, everybody loses, rich and poor. Mm. On all of the social indicators, the more unfair any society, the more people are worse off in terms of health care, mental health, crime and violence, education, all of those things. And as I say, America in particular, of all Western countries, is the most unfair and has the worst social indicators. We're at the bottom, even though we're the richest country in the world. So everybody loses when life is unfair. So I've set up a thing called the Fairness Principle the Fairness Campaign with Fairness Principles, 10 Fairness Principles, to bring this back into everybody's lives, to remind people that it's more important. There are a lot of things that are more important than just getting ahead. And when people are fair, everybody wins. When people are fair, businesses work faster. I just spoke the other day with Stephen Covey, who has a company called Speed of Trust, and he's talked about when things are when companies trust each other, they can work much faster. Everything goes much faster when people trust each other, when people are fair. So these fairness principles really came out of the bond and are very much about the idea of, you know, don't be afraid to stand up first for things like honesty, trust, and mutual benefit. Because when you are a little change agent like that, it is surprising how quickly you can be a little force for change. And how quickly it becomes viral.
You know, Lynn, to me, of course, you're not just talking to me. Of course, you're talking to our whole audience and the world out there, actually. You're preaching to the choir if you're talking to me and a handful of people. But how does one get the people, like that 1%? Are you saying that they have a button that says, I've gotten too much or I've done too much in this area, and that they're not listening to that button?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. That's what I'm saying. We're all hardwired. I mean, scientists have shown through so many studies that we're hardwired to be fair. I'll give you an example. There's a game called the ultimatum game. You know, scientists model human behavior with what they call games, you know, with game theory. And what they do is they get people and they put them in kind of a tight spot with some sort of moral dilemma, and then watch how they behave. And that demonstrates to them, you know, how people inherently are. And one of the games they play is an ultimatum game. And this is how it goes. Let's say I've never met you before, and I'm never going to meet you again. We're paired off. I'm given $10. And I'm told I can make a split in any way with you. So I can keep all of it and give you nothing, or I can, you know, divide it up in any way I want. And you can choose to accept it or not. If you choose to accept the split I give you, we both keep our portion of the split. If you don't, neither of us gets it. So the assumption is that the common assumption is that I'll probably keep about $9 and hand you one, and that you'll probably accept the one because something is better than nothing.
Mm.
Well, this game has been played all around the world with cultures, even indigenous cultures who don't play with money, they play with tobacco. And guess what? The most common split is 50%.
Mm.
The most common split is 50%. People just inherently are fair. And they've demonstrated this with babies, too. They've shown, even before they're socialized, babies and a lot of, you know, our close relatives, like chimps, are inherently fair. And they go bananas when, pardon the pun, they go bananas when, you know, when researchers set up something where it is unfair. Even monkeys reject unfair pay. When they're given tasks to do, and let's say they do all the work, but one of their fellow monkeys gets the same reward as they do for not doing any work, they go bananas. They start mm-hmm. throwing the rewards at the researchers. They refuse to participate. They know what's fair. They
wow.
know what's, so do babies. They know what's fair, too, and they are inherently generous. Inherently fair, and inherently give. So it's hardwired into us, and it's, you know, we even have, as I say, an it's not fair button. So even Bernie Madoff, he has an it's not fair button. He just had it turned off, I guess. You know, or there's a justification that goes on, such a psychological justification, like, you know, there's not enough out there. And so somebody like that just has to amass and hoard so much because they've had some sort of background that's imbued them with the idea, there's not enough, so I better take it all myself. So, but we're not hardwired for that. That's the story we tell ourselves. That's the overlay. And, of course, the story we've been telling ourselves, more or less since Darwin, is that there isn't enough. Life's a race to the finish line, so I better get in there first because otherwise I'm not going to have anything. So what is required, as I say, is a new story about how we really are. And that's not the story isn't that there isn't enough. The real story is there's plenty. And also, we all want to connect. We don't want to compete. We feel better. We feel inherently good about doing for each other, about belonging together, about agreeing with each other, about giving to each other altruistically, about being fair. That's all hardwired into us. And when we do that, we act in our more authentic nature.
Wow, I'm feeling really good about having this conversation with you and putting out this message and the fact that you are putting out this message through your book, The Bond, Lynn. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd like to ask you, for those who haven't read The Field and who haven't yet read The Bond, what is the connection between the two and how we work with either and both. So we're talking to Lynn McTaggart, who has an exciting new book out called The Bond, Connecting Through the Space Within or Between Us. Connecting Through the Space Between Us. We'll be right back with Lynn McTaggart.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
Well, we're back. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and I'm having a conversation with the Lynn McTaggart, who has written The Field and The Bond. And for those of you who haven't read any of her books or haven't read this one yet, go to thebond.net to learn more about her and to get the books. Of course, you could always go to lifechanges.com. Or Life Changes with Filippo or Life Changes Network and find it there. But thebond.net. Lynn, before the break, we were talking about fairness and all of that. And it's something of what you said reminded me of your book, The Field. And I thought, okay, well, how does one distinguish between The Field and The Bond? Or is it the same thing? Or how do they interplay?
Great question, Filippo. The Bond really talks about human beings and our connection, basically, and from our subatomic particles. And it also means this, and maybe I should start with what I was talking about with The Field. The field basically is a quantum energy field. Scientists in quantum physics understand that things aren't really things, that subatomic particles send energy back and forth like an endless game of tennis. And a subatomic particle is a little vibrating packet of energy. It's not a little billiard ball like we're told in physics. It's a little vibrating packet of energy. And as I say, it's sending energy back and forth with other subatomic particles. Now, the energy between one set of subatomic particles is very tiny. It's like a half a watt's worth of energy in that little one trade each time the tennis ball is sent over the net. But if you add up all the tennis games being played between all the subatomic particles and all the things in all the universe, you come up with this unbelievable, unfathomable energy out there in empty space. And that energy gives rise to a field, and that's what's known as the zero-point field. Mm. So what the field is, according to a number of leading-edge scientists, is kind of it's kind of the all-encompassing matrix. It's the all-encompassing mothership of all energy and all things. We're all part of it because our subatomic particles are all part of this energy field. And it means two things: that the field is kind of a memory bank of everything that ever was, but also it's a connector. It explains why we're in touch with the furthest reaches of the cosmos, why things like remote viewing or ESP can take place. So we are all part of this energy field. The Bond was really to talk about the relationship we have with each other inside of that field. Mm. For instance, two subatomic particles. You know, what I really addressed was, in The Bond, are we individual and were we meant to be competitive?
Right.
And the answer is, actually, there is no such thing as individuality. And that's what I wanted The Bond to be much more embracing and also to be a new roadmap about how to live according to the new scientific story. So The Bond encompasses information and ideas in the field and extends them much further. So it looks at the idea of whether or not we are individual, and it shows that the smallest unit of the universe is not actually a thing. It's a relationship. Subatomic particles, really, it's very difficult to say where one thing ends and where another thing begins, because their bond is so intrinsic, so necessary, so profound, that you can't really separate them out. That connection is the unit. And that whole idea of a connection so profound and integral that you can't separate things out really repeats itself in nature. You see that between our bodies and our environment. You know, we believe that we're separate, and one of the real tenets of that is that we have a body that's different and separate from all other things. So we think, and we think our body is completely self-contained. We think our body is created primarily by our DNA, and that it goes out from our DNA to our cells, to our tissues, to our organs, etc. And we're created essentially from inside out. But the new science of epigenetics shows the reverse. It shows that our DNA is very much like the keys of a piano, and they only get played or not due to environmental influences. The water we drink, the air we breathe, the food we eat, the friends we have, the sum total of how we live our lives, that determines whether or not a quartet sitting above each gene, quartet of atoms, gets expressed, and they in turn express the genes, you know, whether they turn the genes on, whether they play the keys of the piano. And so, in a sense, we're not created from inside out. We're created from outside in. And our bond, our body, is basically a sum total of our what we have inside us and what is outside of us. And we would not be the people we are without that bond. So this gets mimicked all through nature, with our relationships with people, with our societal structures. In every way, there is this bond, this connection.
You know, my father used to say that some Greek or Latin philosopher used to say, tell me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are. And I was reminded of that while you were saying this. Is there a connection there?
Yes, absolutely. Because your friends also affect those genes and whether or not they're going to be played. If you have positive influences and relationships in your life, you know, certain genes will get played and expressed, is really the term they use. If you don't, you know, or if you have negative experiences, you know, different kinds of expressions will happen. Certain genes will be turned on or off. So that is very true. It's very true.
You know, in the book, it's interesting, you reference certain things that have happened, like the 2004 tsunami and some of what happened there with the survivors. And you referenced gang members, two rival gangs in Watts in Los Angeles, and how they reconciled or what have you. And I wanted to take an example that has been a question in my mind. So the Chilean miners, right? The whole world was watching and hoping and praying and waiting for these however many 7 or 10 whatever miners to be saved, and yet at the same time there were wars going on with hundreds if not thousands of people dying. And what about there's such a dichotomy. It almost doesn't make sense.
Absolutely. But you see how much news that was. What happened to people with good news? I mean, good news just resonated through us because we want to believe and we want to connect and we want to feel good about this little goal that those 33 had. They were so united together. They operated together in what's called a superordinate goal, you know, a goal that can only be achieved by the collective efforts of everybody involved. And they weren't just living for themselves. They were living for the good of their country, for the good of mankind. It was just such a feel-good story. And this is what the media just doesn't get. And, of course, we're now watching the media be one more of those structures that's collapsing. Too. I mean, we're watching the biggest media empire collapse right before our eyes in the Murdoch organization. And we're seeing, and now it's being stripped away, the terrible corruption that was occurring with that. The connections between the Murdoch Corporation and politicians. The connections between the Murdoch Corporation and the police, where they were selling their phone numbers. I mean, it's all so shocking and terrible, we just can't imagine it. But you see, in the human spirit, we really resonate and want something more than that. And that's why that was the biggest story of the year.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned the media, and I know that in conversations about this show, Life Changes with Filippo, being on television, initially we were having some people say that the audience is not ready for this, it doesn't want this, it doesn't want positive programming, it doesn't sell, and yet it's interesting how there are proportionately more funny and fun YouTube videos than violent ones or ones that are negative.
Mm-hmm.
So the audience does.
Yeah, that just shows you, doesn't it?
So on the one hand, we'll have a war because we're fighting for something that we believe in, and people die, and that's just life, isn't it? "Quote unquote," as that lady, that mother said in your story. But on the other hand, we also want people to live. So that's the dichotomy I was talking about earlier, and you're saying that that when we're united in a goal. You know, I'm trying to understand it because it just doesn't make sense to me, this whole war thing.
No, well, war doesn't make sense. But you see, you know, people get polarized over ideas and they believe that their idea is worth, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people go to war. You know, there is partly this whole thing of an idea. There's belonging too, you know, being part of this group. And our beliefs is against another group. There are injustices, and that's another, you know, there are sometimes good reasons for war, as there was in World War II, when there was an injustice going on and people were fighting for freedom. So there are, you know, there are reasons, different reasons for war. I think there are, it's that old mindset. Once again, there isn't enough. That whole mindset that seems to drive us, the old story. And one of the things that, as I say, that I want to do is provide a new narrative to show that wasn't who we were meant to be. But the whole idea of the superordinate goal is an interesting one because it's a fast track toward connection. That the idea that you have a bigger goal and people come together working toward that goal, it's been demonstrated over and over again to heal some of the biggest divides. And what I talk about too in the bond is a way of relating to people that also heals divides and that has been used in a lot of healing dialogues that are going on between groups that have been historically in conflict. When they learn to talk to each other in a different way, where they're not trying to win, they're not trying to be in an adversarial relationship, they find new connections. And the connection that's always there underneath the differing beliefs, they make the connection. And that's the thing that's amazing. You know, we have differing beliefs, and that's the thing that creates war. But underneath that, there is connection. No matter how different we think we are, no matter how despicable we find the other person, we still have a connection that's always there, the bond.
Mm. You know, Lynn, there's been this underlying theme in my mind throughout this whole interview that I haven't been able to resolve. And it's been interesting because I like the concept so much, and at the same time, I watched my parents be fair, what I thought was fair, and what they thought was fair. And this is what the conclusion that I've come to in listening to you speak, that they were fair all their lives, and I watched them end up being stepped on and walked all over and all of that, and now my dad's gone, and my mom's old, and they got nothing fair in life. And so what good was it them being fair? But now I'm thinking there's fairness and there's weakness. The person who would accept the dollar, like in the analogy you gave earlier, because a dollar is better than nothing, is weak. But the fairness is 50-50, and that wasn't there. So in not to put down my parents, but theirs was more weakness, though they were thinking they were being fair, and that was their intent. So I was trying to rationalize this fairness thing, because we're going to ask people to be more fair, and that doesn't mean being weak.
Exactly. I'm saying in here, weakness, fairness is standing up. It's going to the plate. It's being brave, you know, and it's being strong too. And not being afraid to openly stand for things like mutual benefit and integrity. You know, it's okay to say, hey, that's not fair. You've taken too much. And also supporting, it's also a strong position, because I'm also saying you should support only those businesses, organizations, or policies that place fairness to the consumer or to each other above profits, and to refuse to support anything that engages in cheating or corporate cheating or other practices that harm its competitors. But what we're really talking about with fairness is not across the board sameness. I'm not talking about communism or socialism, you know, and, you know, I can speak with certain authority because I live in the UK where there were some socialist practices. It's oftentimes misused in the States. But I'm not talking about sameness. I'm talking about equal opportunity. And I'm talking about mutual benefit. I'm talking about problem solving that involves the whole of the group, where everybody can benefit, where there's solutions that are both good for you and good for the group. That's not a hard thing to achieve. It just takes the willingness to see this and the willingness to step up to the plate and to say, you know what, I'm going to go first here, and I'm going to set this as my goals. Because, you know, we all think life seems unfair, you know, but you don't have to be. You know, you can make fairness your mantra and make fairness and insist on fairness in the way people treat you too.
Now I'm happy.
You know, because when you're fair, other people respond in kind. When you do unto others as you'd want them to do unto you, that's the, you know, good old golden rule. When you're fair, others respond in kind. And you know, it's in our DNA. You're just reminding them of the way they really ought to behave.
Lynn, we've said a lot. You've said a lot. And, of course, you say a lot in the book, The Bond. Would you like to leave us with something or capture some of the moments that we've shared, that just to leave us with something that will hopefully resonate with people again?
Yeah. What I wanted to say in The Bond was to really energize people. Because, you know, we're all feeling really frightened right now. You know, we're all in the midst of so much crisis. And we're all waiting for the big guys in charge to do stuff, you know. And they don't seem to be able to even speak across the aisle. They're involved in adversarial relationships. And that's the only way they know how to talk to each other. And I feel that the way through these crises is not going to be from a top-down approach. It's going to be from the bottom up, from the grassroots level. It's going to be in little communities. And it's also my belief that everybody is a potential game changer. The science shows that even in a culture of selfishness like we've got now, all it takes is one or two people who are wedded to ideas like fairness and reciprocity, one or two little game changers to change the whole culture of selfishness around. A woman did that by just leaving money in her Coke machine at her office every day with a sign saying, your Coke's been paid for. Keep the spirit alive and pay it forward. And you know, that doing that every day first freaked out all of her coworkers, and then it changed the game. So my point to everyone is, it doesn't have to be like this. All it takes, it doesn't take the big guys in charge. All it takes is you and me here and now, and our belief and our decision that it's not going to be like this, not for one more day. And the other thing I'd like to do is just let everybody know, if they'd like the Fairness Campaign principles, they can get that. They can get a free extract from my book by downloading www.thebond.net. And they'll get more information about how to bring this into their lives.
And if you're local, you're going to get to see Lynn McTaggart at the 2011 Mastery Conference, sponsored by The Reconnection, on October 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. So, and Lynn, I'm looking forward to you and I bonding more at that conference, because I'm going to be hosting a panel with you, Joe Dispenza, Lee Carroll, Gary Zukav, and Eric Pearl. And that's going to be at the 2011 Mastery Conference, sponsored by The Reconnection, on October 22nd. I'm looking forward to getting to see you again in person.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to it, too. And I want to let people know, too, we have a teleseminar running right now. And I've interviewed 23 incredible masters in so many ways and thought leaders, including Eric Pearl, Marianne Williamson, Jack Canfield, Marcy right. Scheinmoff, too many people to mention. And if they go to masterful.net/thebond, they can find out all about it and how to join up.
So masterful.net/thebond.
It's a free teleseminar all about the ideas in the bond and basically talking about tools for a new world.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. And thank you for being on our show and bringing up all these beautiful concepts of fairness and all these wonderful things that we're all going to incorporate one by one, all these lights lighting up all over the place, thanks to you.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Filippo.
Take care.
I know so. Take care.
I know so. Bye-bye. Well, that was exciting. And we'll be back with our producer wrap right after this with Mark LeJour.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, we're back for our producer's wrap with our producer, Mark LeJour, and this has been a great interview with Lynn McTaggart, especially about the book, The Bond, Connecting Through the Space Between Us. Mark, it almost felt like there was no space between any of us during this.
Yeah, there definitely is a bond when it comes to Lynn and life changes.
I can't wait to see her again in October. You know, it's interesting that she talks a lot about fairness, and it's, of course, a lot about what Dorothy talks about, but you talk about it a lot, too. And long before we even met, you were all about fairness. What were you feeling during that? I felt you.
Well, number of times I almost chimed in and wanted to make comments because everything that the bond is about and a lot of what Lynn was saying and what has been evidenced in her other books, including going back to What Doctors Don't Tell You, that she started in 1989, just blows my mind that she had that information out there in the way that she did back then, which is really about fairness of information. With regarding healthcare, but all of these things resonate with me so much, and have been with me my whole life. It's not like this is something that just came up. You know, I have an affinity for all things medieval and the Round Table and all, you know, everything that lore and myth stands for in terms of fairness and honor and nobility and the lack of hierarchy, you know, a unity in terms of how they treated each other, etc. So, yeah, fairness, to be fair and treating others fairly is what I'm all about. I really, really enjoyed hearing her perspectives on that from an energy level.
Yeah, and like I brought up during the interview, you know, that still – that still bothers me, this thing about we teach children how to, that they need to be fair and they need to share. And then we grow up and we see so much injustice and so many people that don't have opportunities. And there's no reason why they shouldn't, except that other people want to hoard it all. And so it's like, where did all that go?
Well, what's interesting, what came to mind listening to Lynn speak, you know, the fairness button, I believe, is managed by the ego. So we have this intrinsic baseline. We have this fairness, you know, button or this lever that's tripped, and we automatically know that. But and if you look at it, you know, we've been brought up, or there is less in terms of obstacles in the way of dealing with kids because we're taught to give. Raising a child, teaching a child, you know, there's a different set of rules than what happens as we grow and become jaded and the ego starts stepping in. Because if you think about every aspect of our lives, you know, it's almost a tug of war, an energetic tug of war for fairness. And things, you know, I've always said that you know, nobody's gotten hurt by being loved too much. You know, and I think ultimately that is the case. Well, you know, here's an analogy. You know these rafts with that you blow up an air raft, right, for your pool or whatever the case may be, and it has separate sections. But the air goes into the entire raft when you blow it up. You only blow up one section. So the air is going from one section to the next to the next. That's almost how we are as humans, all connected, but have our own energetic bubbles, our own section of the raft. If you squeeze one, it goes into the other one. It has to go somewhere. If you take it out of the other one, it's going to go into the third or whatever the case may be. And it's almost like that is the way that we function energetically, that it will find there is a fairness, there is an equal a portion that we all can share. But in the meantime, we're doing this dance of what do I need or how should I protect myself? Or you took that away from me, so I'm going to go and get it back from here. I'm not getting enough love at work. I'm going to go home and I'm going to kick the cat. Or, you know, there's this whole exchange, this energetic dance that we're doing as we move this around, trying to find that fair balance.
You know, what a great analogy that is about the raft, especially because, well, yes, it does have the bubble segments, and they do seem like they're separate, but you're right. It all got blown up from the same place, and it's all the same air. We're made up of the same thing.
Exactly.
There's just this illusion of a plastic thing between this part of the raft and that part of the raft.
Yeah, the illusion of separation. But it's immediately obvious how when you affect one part of the raft, the rest of it is affected. And, you know, if you consider that air to be the energy that is a little bit less obvious, you know, it's harder to see. It's the same thing, though. When you go in and you take too much from somebody, you're taking the air out of their bubble, out of their section. And guess what? They're going to have to get it from somewhere else, or you're going to have to give it back, because you're going to reach fairness, or you're going to reach balance. Everybody understands the universe is about balance. What is fairness? Fairness is balance.
And if that raft gets popped on one end, the other end might not feel it at first, but it will.
Indeed, it will.
It will. How interesting. You know, so many concepts were brought up throughout the show, but the one obviously of fairness is so important. But you heard I was talking about my parents and weakness, what I thought my parents were being good or being kind. They thought they were being Christian-like or God, you know, but it was weakness. So I have had this imbalance of what fairness is or what rightness is. Rightness isn't always letting the other person win.
Well, absolutely, and I heard your metaphor, the story of weakness, and it hit home. As you know, that I'm a big fan of the, and using the analogy of our programming, you know, the computer programming, and really, you know, that weakness is derived based on a belief system or based on a series of experiences that your parents will have had and brought with them, and it created a belief system to operate with, which can be defined, if we have to put definitions, as weakness. But that's the, you know, therein is the playing field in terms of the game of life, right? We have these experiences, we have these experiences and learnings that are married with our emotions, and that creates a thought system. And so that is going to determine, are they the type of people that are going to fight for what's right, that are going to take what's theirs? Or are they the people that, based on their belief system, are going to give because they believe that's what's fair, what's best? And there is no right or wrong here. That is just truly the difference of our individual programming based on the current rules in society, which are changing. And I do believe, and you and I have talked about this, right, many times, and we talk about it on a show, probably every show, you know, this move to a creative, collaborative culture, like Lynn was saying, you know, things are breaking down. Now you have the media breaking down. Obviously, you know, we're looming on the financial defaults for the first time here, where other countries are going bankrupt daily right now. All of this is breaking down, so the rules are changing, which will change that definition of fairness.
Hmm. You know, I like the fact that you say that there's no right or wrong. There definitely is a time to stop and not do anything. And like, for example, when you sleep, of course, something's happening while you sleep. But that's the time for that thing to happen. And then there's the time to be waking up, potentially doing something. But one can't say that one's better than the other. We have both. And that they're both part of our lives. And that system has been a part of our lives, and it's here. But it's also a time for that system to be, for another system to take precedent, to take lead.
Absolutely. And life changes.
And life changes, and we're the change agents to help that happen. And obviously Lynn is too. And thank you, Mark, for this. And thank you, Dorothy, and thank you, Don, for engineering the show. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and together with Dorothy and Mark, our producers, and Don, our engineer, we thank you for being part of the positive changes that we are all looking for in this world, and for being part of this show. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network, and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes.